You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
I'm Katie Frankowitz. A designated campsite for unhoused people in Astoria won't be coming to the city anytime soon. At a meeting this week, Astoria City Councilors agreed to put that plan on pause. This followed a meeting earlier in April where city leaders heard overwhelmingly negative feedback about two possible campsites. City Councilor Andrea Mazzarella said the designated campsite was meant to address core issues around homelessness in the city, but that the pushback city councilors heard points to a lack of trust and heightened frustration.
I'm not giving up on that. I think that's like a small hut village in the future or designated campsite in the future. But I feel pretty strongly that right now, no matter what location we try to find, we're going to get the same response from the public. There is not going to be any location that people are going to trust that we're going to be able to execute this well. And so I feel like I'd like to do that, but I don't think we can do it quickly enough to make an immediate impact. And I don't know that we can get anyone on board publicly to support us.
Now city leaders plan to take a different approach and will explore several other related ideas and priorities at upcoming meetings in May. Amending Astoria's existing camping ordinance is back on as a discussion item, and the city will consider removing Exchange Street from a map that lists camping options downtown. Camping there has been a long-standing source of frustration and concern, and current camps are even more built out than in the past. The weekly Astoria Sunday Market is due to descend on that area beginning on Mother's Day weekend. Police were already planning on giving campers notice that they need to pack up belongings. City councilors also want to explore the possibility of providing dry storage areas and of bringing on a community outreach specialist, either creating a city position or working with a community partner to provide that service to the city. The city councilors are also looking to increase coordination with other government and community partners. And they plan to discuss the possibility of limited permitted camping in Astoria, something Astoria Police Chief Stacy Kelly says could provide a more structured format for homeless campers. Councilors hope it could also get at enforcement issues, though City Manager Scott Spence said enforcement remains a concern across the ideas the City Council is considering. Boats looking to enter the boat basin at the Port of Garibaldi in Tillamook County face a growing issue. Sediment flowing down the Miami River into a navigation channel at the entrance of the bay. Port of Garibaldi General Manager Mike Saindon says there are daily incidents of boats struggling to enter the port's boat basin, but that Oregon ports also face major challenges when it comes to trying to fund the dredging projects necessary to remove this kind of sediment. In some cases, costs have quadrupled since 2019. In Garibaldi, the port's dredging needs for its boat basin alone have jumped from $500,000 to $2 million. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers recently secured funding to support inflated costs, but will not go through the necessary state and county permitting processes. Now, Tillamook County will take the lead on permitting. One main concern for Garibaldi's dredging project is where to deposit dredged materials. County staff will work with state officials and others to complete an analysis of shellfish beds and fish migration in the area to find a site that will qualify under the state's environmental regulations. Following that, the county will need to go through a comprehensive plan amendment process to allow the identified site to serve as a dredged materials dump site, a process that requires multiple public hearings. Dredging will take place at Garibaldi after the completion of the rehabilitation of the South Jetty at the entrance of the bay this summer. The aim is to increase navigability and the flow of water through the channel between the jetties. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
Fishing nets, once used to catch fish from the Pacific Ocean off Newport, will now be used as shields for soldiers and people in Ukraine. The nonprofit Net Your Problem is collecting netting and lines from a variety of industries, including commercial fishing operations. Executive Director Nicole Baker says the overall goal is to keep these materials from going to the landfill. NetYour Problem became involved in the Ukraine project in the fall of 2025, after another group reached out to ask if the nets the nonprofit collects could be sent to Ukraine to protect soldiers from Russian drone strikes. The nets are set up on poles, creating a tunnel over roadways that drones get tangled in. Baker says fishing boats can drop off nets that have reached the end of their life or aren't working properly. This story comes to us through a partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Data centers are making it hard to plan for the Pacific Northwest's energy future. That's according to an analysis out this month. The amount of energy a data center uses can vary a lot. Artificial intelligence takes a lot of power. Cloud storage takes less. And nobody is tracking how many data centers are being built, or for what use. Elaine Hart with Sylvan Energy Analytics says that's what's making planning for the future more difficult.
You know, all these things are very uncertain. We're kind of at a point of unprecedented uncertainty, which is very scary for planners. And it means we need solutions that are kind of robust to a lot of different possibilities.
Hart says that limiting data centers during extreme weather could help keep the lights on when energy use is at its highest. It's an approach some data centers have already adopted. Southern Oregon University will need to completely rethink its academic programs to survive. That's according to a preliminary consultant's report. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn has more.
Even with $15 million from the state, SOU is facing a catastrophic fiscal crisis. Deloitte's preliminary recommendations include transforming academic offerings, outsourcing administrative services, and possibly changing health insurance providers, all in a very short timeline. Deloitte's Megan Kluver said this plan is the only option, and even it might not be enough.
There are not many viable options for the institution short of realizing this incredibly challenging path other than to wind down the institution.
The plan isn't finalized yet. Deloitte will release its full report Monday, and SOU's Board of Trustees will vote on it next Friday. JPR is licensed to SOU. We cover the university just like any other institution. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
On top of McBee Grade, rising up outside the Tri-Cities, clumps of wildflowers sprinkled the landscape. It's like the sun's been playing kissy face with the ridges. Recently, NWPB's senior correspondent Anna King rolled up to that steep gravel road with a regional wildflower expert.
Ernie Crutiford is slowly driving me up McBee Grade. We're up way high, and there are no guardrails. Crutiford is craning his neck to spy wildflowers and native plants on the hillside. I'm hoping his gaze soon returns to the road. Bella, his little blue heeler, is also nervous in the back.
Right here, as you're driving up, you'll see the phlox, and you'll see the balsam root, see the green rabbit brush and the yarrow. It's still in bloom right now, and you'll see the desert parsley, the nine-leaf desert parsley, are called triternatum. And you'll, oh gosh, in just about a week or two, about 2 weeks, you're going to see the penstemons are blooming up here, and now, oh, just drop-dead gorgeous.
Crutiford is a self-taught wildflower expert. He's heavily involved with the Columbia Basin chapter of the Washington Native Plant Society. For about a dozen years, he's led hikes and discussions at this time of year.
But this is where we see the common name is sticky stem penstemon. Beautiful purple flower. And when you see it down along the bank here, get out. And if you can climb up the side of the bank on one of the side ridges here and look up, it's just, the banks are just covered. That might be something right there. It's in bloom. Here it is. Oh my gosh, it's in bloom right now. This is the perfect time to be here. It's the perfect time.
Crutiford says the Mid-Columbia wildflowers will be out for about the next couple of weeks. Hunting wildflowers for peak joy on the McBee Grade. I'm Anna King.
Turning now to news from Washington State. The Northwest Ice Processing Center in Tacoma is one of the largest detention facilities in the country. People from across the Northwest are detained there. Now, Washington state officials are demanding that health inspectors be allowed inside. State government reporter Sarah Mises-Tan has more.
The governor and attorney general filed an injunction to get health inspectors access to the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma. The center has repeatedly blocked health officials from seeing inside. State Rep. Lillian Ortiz Self of Mukilteo says living conditions are reportedly dire.
Above everything else, they're human beings, and they don't deserve to be assaulted, raped, starved, poisoned by chemicals.
About 1,300 people are being held at the facility. Over 3,000 reports have been filed against the company that owns the detention center, alleging subpar living conditions like dirty drinking water, contaminated food, and sexual assault and violence. The company disputes these claims. In Olympia, I'm Sarah Mises-Tan.
Val Hoyle is running for a third term, representing Oregon's 4th District in Congress, saying she hopes to be a part of a blue wave that will hold the Trump administration accountable. Her opponent in the Democratic primary, Melissa Byrd, says the district needs a new, bolder voice who has directly experienced the impacts of this administration's policies. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White reports.
Val Hoyle says it hasn't been easy to get legislation across the finish line or force accountability while in the minority party. The Springfield Democrat says, despite that, she's been able to eke out wins, especially resources, in a divided and chaotic Washington.
I've made a lot of progress in the last 2 years on expanding tribal co-management of our forest lands and natural resources and public lands. I've been able to get more worker protections and then bring back over $31 million of investments into this district in infrastructure. The Transportation Infrastructure Committee, it still operates in a bipartisan way.
Hoyle says if voters send her back for a third term in Congress, she's hopeful that will change and Democrats will have the votes they need to enforce their power to declare war, set tariffs, and pursue impeachment.
Voters' sentiment has shifted so far against Donald Trump. We can hold this administration accountable for the illegal, immoral, and most importantly, unconstitutional actions that they have taken over these past 2 years.
Hoyle previously served as Oregon's labor commissioner and as a state representative. Her opponent in the Democratic primary, Melissa Byrd of Corvallis, says Hoyle's efforts over the last 2 years aren't enough to meet this moment.
Voters want something to vote for, and they are tired of being on the defense. They want someone who is going to actively advocate on their behalf, regardless of who is in leadership, regardless of what the message is. They want someone who's going to actively be a part of listening to them and trying to figure out solutions.
Byrd is a descendant of the Shivwitz Band of Paiutes in Utah and has worked as a lay preacher, social worker, and reproductive rights advocate. She says her family has been personally impacted by the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the federal government, starting when her husband's job at NOAA was rescinded. She says many people she knows in Corvallis and on the coast have similar stories, or are struggling with the trickle-down impacts of other federal policies, like more complicated SNAP benefits or Medicaid requirements.
This idea of the professional politician and people being in politics for years and years, what that has created is a cohort of people who do not know what it is like to actually live in this economy, yet they're making decisions for people who live in this economy every single day.
Byrd says her goal, if she gets to Congress, is to increase the minimum wage and reset the 1970s-era federal poverty level to help break cycles many working-class people feel trapped in.
Because it will save probably billions in tax dollars in the long run to make that adjustment, but it also helps people who are using these safety net programs actually be able to move out of survival and into thriving.
Hoyle says she can empathize with the economic reality many of her constituents are going through because her family relied on the social safety net to make ends meet while she was growing up.
I am not known as one of the people in Congress that came from means. I am seen as who I am, which is someone that speaks up for people who've had to struggle, who've worked their way up. And I believe that when you climb the ladder, you don't pull it up behind you.
Both candidates also say they support Medicare for All, abolishing ICE, and creating a legal pathway to citizenship. A third candidate, Dan Ballin, will also appear on the ballot. Ballin has not raised funds and previously ran for the seat 2 years ago as a Libertarian. I'm Rebecca Hansen-White, reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Department. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. For more local and regional news, visit kmun.org/news. Up next, American Democracy Minute.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. An Arizona man organizing voter registration drives in Pennsylvania in 2024 was sentenced April 27th for his involvement in submitting fraudulent registrations and will serve prison time and probation. The trial for his six employees is still pending. VoteBeat Pennsylvania reports that a pro-democracy nonprofit hired Arizona-based Field and Media to conduct voter registration drives in Pennsylvania communities of color. The now sentenced manager of the registration drives in Berks, Lancaster, and York counties, Guillermo Sainz-Garola, set quotas for new registrations and offered financial incentives if quotas were met, illegal under Pennsylvania election law. In a statement, the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office said six of his field staff are accused of submitting 2,500 false registrations, which were identified and invalidated by county election officials in October 2024. President Donald Trump exploited the incident during his 2024 campaign to inaccurately claim that 2,600 fraudulent ballots had been found. Sainz-Garola will serve jail time and 11 months of probation for three counts of solicitation of registration using the financial incentives. The registration drive workers submitting the fraudulent registrations are charged with forgery and additional election code violations. We've linked the local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.